Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I'm Janice Dean.
I'm David Asman.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, August 11th, 2023. I'm Jared Halpern. What can and cannot be said by former President Trump about his federal elections case in D.C.? A judge considers that question today.
You got to imagine in a case involving a man who's currently running for president, his team has to be really careful this doesn't inflame into an actual gag order, because that would be nearly impossible for, I think, the former president to comply with on the campaign trail.
We speak with Fox News Sunday host Shannon Bream.
I'm Jessica Rosenthal. You may have seen the videos, groups of thieves either running from stores with stolen goods or casually filling up a cart with retail items they will not pay for. Either way, it's impacting some major stores and some big cities' bottom lines.
There is absolutely no doubt that many of the stores that have closed, for example, in San Francisco and Portland, Oregon, and in Chicago, that they're closing because of a rise in criminal activity and difficulty making money in these areas.
And I'm Tommy Lahren. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
In a case where every decision is without precedent, a big decision looms for the judge presiding over the special counsel's investigation of former President Trump. Attorneys for Trump and federal prosecutors are due in a Washington, D.C. court today to make their cases to Judge Tanya Chutkan over whether a protective order is needed ahead of a trial connected to accusations of trying to overturn the 2020 election. Former President Trump's attorney, John Lauro, argues the request is another attempt to censor political speech of the Republican frontrunner and top challenger to the sitting president, Joe Biden.
I personally would love to see that. I'm convinced the Biden administration does not want the American people to see the truth. And they acted on it by filing this protective order, which is an effort to keep important information about this case from the press.
Jack Smith, the special counsel, says some evidence and witness testimony must be protected to prevent harassment or intimidation.
They say, listen, material that we're going to turn over in discovery, this is interviews or evidence that you've collected, they don't want the former president to be able to take that and use that discovery material to talk about it, to post about it on social media.
Shannon Bream is the anchor of Fox News Sunday and chief legal correspondent for Fox News.
You know, in the filing that started this whole thing, they cited that social media post that he had last week. Basically, if you go after me, I'm coming after you. And they said, we don't want him to use material that we turn over in discovery to use it to intimidate witnesses or to harm this prosecution. His legal team says they're trying to step on his rights, his ability to speak his mind. This isn't a gag order yet. And they have to be really careful that that's not where they end up.
How normal are these types of orders from a judge in a federal case like this? I mean, if you're dealing with conspiracy cases or dealing with cases that maybe deal with national security or witnesses that you're trying to protect from harassment, is this pretty standard fare, or is this an unusual ask from prosecutors?
Well, as you know, nothing that is happening with his former president
well,
in all
the
of the
usual.
Legal rings,
yeah.
I mean, nothing is normal. I wonder if absent that social media post Friday night, if Jack Smith and his team would have so quickly gone to the court to say, like, we need this protective order. They might have anyway, because they know that the former president is out there on the campaign trail. So much of, as you know, and our listeners know, of his stump speech is about these cases, is about they're wrong and Jack Smith is deranged and all of those kinds of things. So, you know, absent that social media post, maybe this filing would have happened anyway. Listen, a federal judge has all kinds of power to say this is a sensitive case, or we don't trust how the, you know, opposing side is going to use this material. And so I'm going to set some boundaries and restrictions on how it can be done. And you got to imagine in a case involving a man who's currently running for president, like I said, his team has to be really careful this doesn't inflame into an actual gag order, because that would be nearly impossible for, I think, the former president to comply with on the campaign trail.
And that's the balance here, I think, that the judge is going to have to try and reach, too, right? She's going to have to take into account that he is running for president, or does that not factor into a decision like this?
I mean, I think it has to, because it's such a unique situation. But you can also see that this is a judge who is not amused with some of what's going on. Because remember, filing, she is not messing around. This filing from Jack Smith came late Friday night. By Saturday morning, the president, former president's legal team had filed saying, we need more time, because the judge had said, you got to answer this by Monday afternoon. They said, we need more time. By Saturday afternoon, she had said, you're not getting more time. I deny your motion and I need to hear from you on Monday. So I think she is not going to put up with any kinds of delays or shenanigans. This is, remember, a judge who has said before, in ruling against the Trump team on something else related to January 6th, saying, you know, the president is not a king, and this guy right now is not even president. So I think she's just not going to have a lot of tolerance for anything that deviates from the norms.
Here's a question that I have been asked, and I don't know what the answer is, so maybe you do. Although, we're in uncharted waters here, so I understand there's not, like, precedent that you can go back to and look at case law. But if the judge does issue some sort of protective order, right, put some sort of limit on what can or cannot be talked about publicly, and the former president goes ahead and does it anyway, he would be held in contempt?
Yeah, I mean, I think his team will immediately appeal it if that happens. So probably while it's on appeal, you know, the former president could get away with something if he goes out there and talks about certain things. But again, it's not talking about the case. It's about specific evidence and discovery. Mm-hmm. But if he eventually loses those appeals and a court finds, nope, he has to comply with what the judge is doing, she's going to have a lot of leeway for holding him in contempt. That can mean fines. I mean, I guess you could argue it could mean, you know, the threat of going behind bars.
I mean, that's the thing. That's like the high end, right? The high end for being held in contempt is you go to jail.
In my view, honestly,
that seems the least likely outcome, but there are other sanctions.
There are things that happen in courts and judges who get less than excited about somebody violating their orders. But I heard somebody the other day saying that President Trump would actually love it if they threatened to throw him in jail, because as much as he's taken off in the polls and in fundraising because he's out there saying they're coming after you, but they're going to have to come through me and I'm fighting for you, I'm going to D.C. to get arrested for you. Imagine if he was somehow sent to jail. First of all, Secret Service would have to go with him. I mean, it's just such a bizarre thing to contemplate.
Again, that's why I think that's on the least likely end. But yeah. You know, I mean, what? I guess, like, you talk about fines.
But I don't know that fines, I mean, I don't know that that would get his attention.
Could it impact the sentence that were handed down post-conviction?
I don't know. I mean, I think a judge can take a lot of things into account. I don't think pretrial behavior would factor into sentencing, okay. But it's not going to leave a good taste in her mouth. We know that she has been really tough on a lot of January 6th defendants. Mm-hmm. And when it came to their sentencing, she's given jail time, I think, to nearly every person who's come before her. And so she's not got a lot of tolerance for this is kind of like the worst possible matchup for President Trump, because he likes to push the boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I think he enjoys the fight and he is energized by it. His base is fired up by it. So he may enjoy it politically, but the legal side of these cases, that reality is going to be very tough for him.
It is a fascinating time. Let me switch gears a little bit to a big political story this week in Ohio, which seemed like kind of a boring routine question that voters were asked to vote on, but I think is going to have some pretty big implications moving forward. This Proposition 1, I think it was called in Ohio, which there had been some Republicans in Ohio who wanted to raise the threshold by which constitutional amendments could be approved by voters. I think now it's a simple majority. This would have required a 60% majority to add something to the Constitution. Opponents said this was a proxy vote on abortion. Is that because we are expecting a big abortion amendment fight in Ohio next year?
Yeah, I think that, and maybe even sooner. It's interesting because Democrats are a little bit split on the strategy. A lot of the states feel like if we can get an abortion measure on the ballot, it helps Democrats. It would help President Biden. It would help, you know, all those local and state races because
it's an issue that energizes the base.
It is energizing the left for sure. So it's interesting. I did not know this because I don't follow Ohio state law until this week, but they have amended their state constitution over 100 times. I mean, this is something that's sort of common there in Ohio. Yeah. So, yeah, opponents who want to stop an abortion change to the state's constitution there wanted to raise the bar so it would make it harder for people. But honestly, I mean, even if you said, all right, we're going to move it from 50 to 60%, you're still inviting those people to show up because now you're telling them, well, at least 60% of the vote has to help you. Does that not even energize it more? But there are some Democrats who worry about this and feel like there's potential that in certain states, this would not work and would not be good for President Biden, would actually hurt him because the more red states, the more pro-life vote shows up and that actually backfires on them. But, you know, Ohio is one of those bellwether purple states that's so important to a presidential election. So a lot of eyes on that vote this week.
I mean, it reminds me a little bit of a strategy that was employed back in 2004, right? When there was a strategy by Republicans at that time to see if they could get same-sex marriage bans onto the ballot in an awful lot of swing states to sort of bring up Republican interest, Republican enthusiasm. Is that what we can maybe expect to see play out in the coming months and maybe next year in a lot of these swing states that maybe have a little bit more Democratic control right now?
Yeah, but it's interesting that even in places like Florida, they're talking about this, which, you know, DeSantis wins by more than 19 points. It feels firmly red at this moment. But there are groups, there are pro-choice groups who are trying to get a measure onto the ballot there that they think will actually help them in the fall. So, meaning next fall. So I think it's going to be tried in a lot of different states. Listen, in a blue state, you're already probably like, you know, getting this on the ballot in New York is not going to really make a huge difference.
That's not going to probably tip the scales.
New York's mostly going to go blue.
Yeah.
The rare cases that they don't. But in red states, Democrats feel like this could actually help them. And that's where the warnings are coming from within their own party, within the Democrat Party. Hey, don't do this in red states if you're not sure that it's going to help, because otherwise you're going to energize the other side of the ticket, and that's really going to hurt President Biden.
Is that because this, I mean, we've talked a little bit about this, but in the aftermath of the Dobbs decision, the Supreme Court striking down the precedent of Roe v. Wade, it has seemed to shift kind of the political alignment as I think maybe we understood the abortion issue. In other words, like, there seems to be a little bit more, I don't want to use the term necessarily bipartisanship, but maybe a broader coalition in that pro-choice camp than maybe was thought to have existed prior to the downfall of Roe.
Yeah, because you even have more moderate or left of center on some issues, Republicans who are out there saying, hey, on this issue, I can't go with my party. In Florida, you've got a 6-week ban. And there are some Republicans there who say, even for us, that is too far. So some of them are out there talking about donating money and working with pro-choice groups because they feel like their state has gone too far on this particular issue. So it is an interesting coalition that's been coming together in some of these states where the bans are almost total, or there's a fight over whether you can even get abortion pills through the mail. I mean, in some of these places, you know, the more moderate Republicans are saying it's a bridge too far and I'm going to help make sure that women still have access to these things. So I'm going to stand on this particular issue left of center. So it's certainly something that I think pro-life leaders had thought through a lot of this, and they knew that after Roe v. Wade was eventually overturned, which they've been working for, you know, half a century to do, that there would now be state battles that would be much more difficult for them. And so you see some of the blue states get bluer, the red states get redder on this particular issue, and it doesn't leave a lot in the middle to fight over.
Well, no election is unimportant, and no election issue is irrelevant. Even if you think it's just a simple question over how are we going to amend the state constitution, we know that it has massive implications both for that state and in the national political conversation as well. Always happy to have that conversation with you. Shannon Bream, the host of Fox News Sunday. Appreciate the time.
My pleasure, Jared.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
This is Tommy Lahren with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Just this week, Los Angeles police called it a flash mob burglary when as many as 30 people ran out of a Yves Saint Laurent store in Glendale at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Shoppers captured videos of the burglars running out of the store. Look at their arms there, full of merchandise. Police say about $300,000 worth of items were stolen. The suspects escaped in 20 different vehicles.
That's Fox 11 Los Angeles anchor Christine Devine. Sometimes it's just one thief, but just as brazen, like this repeat offender yanking cigarettes and packaged food into a trash can on wheels at a 7-Eleven store in Stockton, also in California. One worker held him down while another beat him with a stick. The clerk recording this told them before it got to that point,
they're not going to do nothing. You just have to just claim you have insurance.
The head of the National Retail Federation said recently during a fireside chat, organized retail crime has grown and that last year it cost retailers and communities $95 billion. New York Mayor Eric Adams said after a recent summit, law enforcement, retail partners, and prosecutors found many are doing this as part of organized crime.
327 people were responsible for the 22,000 arrests. And remember, those arrests, not actions, but there's a clear pattern that we talk about all the time of the extreme recidivism that's driving much of what we see in the problems in this city.
The CEO of Walmart had warned last winter retailers would close in places with high levels of theft. But in other places like San Francisco, Mayor London Breed explained stores are closing not because of theft, but she said after the pandemic, people changed where and how they shopped and spent time. That for all the talk of stores closing in her town,
we didn't hear about Yves Saint Laurent and Chanel expanding their footprint because they've had record sales in Union Square. We didn't hear about Banana Republic and others moving into this corridor of the Union Square area. No one's talking about the fact that IKEA is going to be opening a store on Market Street.
This year, Target officials said retail shrink could cost them $500 million, and that shrink number is growing.
Well, retail theft is a considerable and growing problem.
Jerry Storch is the CEO of Storch Advisors and the former CEO of Toys R Us.
It's especially high in dealing with goods that can be rapidly monetized, something that can be turned into cash quickly. Mm. So it would be things like Tylenol or over-the-counter medicines or you mentioned cigarettes or something that just is immediately identifiable and a value can put on it rapidly. The second would be high-profile brands, particularly luxury goods. So, very high-priced handbags, for example, something along that line.
Jerry, shoplifting has always happened, right? But when did it get like this? I mean, we're seeing these videos of massive numbers of people fleeing a store. It seems very coordinated in many instances.
Well, in general, there are a couple of different categories of shrink. So one is what we call statistical shrink. So that's because of poor record keeping or sort of losing track of inventory. That's going up because, frankly, retailers have lost control of their inventory in many cases during the pandemic and immediately afterwards. Mm. Shrink by outside parties appears to be going up quite significantly, both because of changes in laws enforcing penalties against those who steal, as well as the emergence of online marketplaces that have made it more easy to fence the goods and rapidly turn them into cash. So there's been a lot of factors that have occurred simultaneously to drive both the ease of committing the crime as well as reduce the penalty for committing the crime. And that tends to, like all things in a market, tends to cause an increase in demand for criminal activity.
That makes so much sense. I was just, because that leads to my next question, sort of like if you're in D.C., New York, San Francisco, parts of L.A., you see stuff, locked up. You can't just grab it and put it in your cart, right? That's not necessarily the case in like a medium-sized or smaller-sized city in like maybe Ohio or North Carolina. This seems like to sort of be specific to certain areas of the country.
Well, it's a pretty draconian measure for retailers to start locking up product. It immediately reduces sales of those products because obviously they aren't as easy for a consumer just to grab and put them in their cart and go buy them. So legitimate demand is significantly decreased once you lock a product away. One of the running jokes among retail operators is people call the assets protection people, who are the people that try to handle this shrink problem. People call the asset protection people sales reduction people because almost every step taken to reduce theft also decreases accessibility to products by legitimate customers and therefore sales.
Dang, yes. I was just going to say there are consequences, but it seems like the consequences are mixed, right? You have like Walmart
taking two stores, for example, out of Portland, Oregon. The CEO said they were failing to meet financial expectations. And that same CEO of Walmart said retail thefts that harm companies could result in store closures. Then you hear about, you know, in San Francisco, right, where there are store closures, but the mayor there is saying, well, hold on. It's not because of quality of life issues or retail theft. It's because people are not working in the city like they were. The foot traffic is different. Shopping is different. And plenty of stores are opening up in different parts of the city. Is it both? If stores are closing, could there be competing narratives happening?
Well, sure. More than one thing could be true at the same time. But there is absolutely no doubt that many of the stores that have closed, for example, in San Francisco, in Portland, Oregon, and in Chicago, that they're closing because of a rise in criminal activity and difficulty making money in these areas. It has always been more difficult to operate stores in inner city, high crime areas. And that's true whether it's a grocery store or or a discount store or any kind of store. It's always more difficult. That's why many of these areas have sort of deserts in them in terms of having chain retail stores, because it's just difficult to make money in those environments. But retailers have persevered and tried in many cases, often with collaboration from those communities, to open stores in these areas. But if you can't make any money, eventually you have to close. And to those people who think, well, they're probably just making it up. Well, why would they make it up when it requires writing off a significant capital investment in closing a store?
Yeah, I'll get to that article in a second. It sounds like also this can be serious, right? There's a Homeland Security official who oversees international organized crime and said a lot of this, or at least some of it, is the work of like drug trafficking rings, like sophisticated criminals organizing this. It's not just high school kids or people looking to feed a drug habit or a one-off. I mean, some of this is very sophisticated.
Well, most people believe that the greater volume of crime is committed by organized retail crime, not by someone who's kind of hungry and steals a loaf of bread like the character in Les Mis or something, you know. And when you look at the categories that are stolen, it reinforces that. The categories that are stolen are not necessarily the categories that people need for their everyday lives, but they're categories instead that can be turned into money really fast, and a lot of money. So that tends to push you towards the organized crime theory and not the local theft.
There is this article going around. It's citing some anonymous experts who say actually some of this claim of external theft may be inflated because, well, your own employees might be stealing from you. And there might be some self-checkout theft. You know, a lot of stores are turning to those self-checkout counters. And it does make you wonder if it's not just only organized retail theft that's the problem here. Like Target saying, you know, this year alone, they're looking at $500 million in shrink, you know, due to lost and stolen merchandise. Is it possible there are some other things going on?
Well, sure, Jessica. Again, this is a case where more than one thing can be true at the same time. And as I mentioned earlier in our interview today, the shrink appears to be rising across all categories, whether that's statistical shrink, again, errors in the accounting systems that are caused by having just a glut of inventory, losing track of some of it, or whether or not that's actual criminal activity. In the case of self-checkout, it's interesting because it's a combination of factors. It's both statistical shrink as well as actual people stealing stuff. So, you know, the best, most accurate checkout is done by a trained cashier. And if you notice, when you go to the checkout, they don't let you through until they finally, you know, identify the correct price for everything and ring it up. And if they don't have it, what do? They call someone to get the right price. When someone's doing self-checkout, they're not quite that assiduous in making sure it's exactly priced correctly. They scan it. And if it goes through, great. If it doesn't, oh, well, maybe they missed some things by accident, in all fairness, to someone doing self-checkout. And also, sometimes I'm pretty sure sometimes people go, you know, I can let a few things slip under the radar here and not scan them and get away with it. So most people believe that self-checkout does cause an increase in shrink from both statistical errors as well as from actual theft on the part of the person who's doing the self-checkout.
Yeah, I wish we had more concrete numbers, but until we get them, I guess. Some of the reactions.
Well, in that regard, I just want to point out, it's a little bit like, saying we need more we want more concrete numbers. It's a little bit like saying someone robbed your house and you want to know exactly what was stolen and how much it was worth. Well, you know, you don't always know exactly what was stolen once it's gone. And so that's really the problem here, too. Mm. We know that the product is missing. We don't know how much of it is from employee theft, how much it is from statistical shrink, and how much it is from shrink by outside parties, and how much of the shrink by outside parties from sort of the criminal in the street versus an organized crime. No one can know that because it's unknowable, because the product's been stolen, it's gone.
Some of the reactions to the thefts, though, have been really kind of shocking, right? Like Donna Hansbrough in Savannah, Georgia, working at Lowe's. She was fired for trying to stop shoplifters. She grabbed onto their cart. Same with two women at Lululemon. They were told they violated company policy by engaging or getting in the way of shoplifters, and they could have been hurt. So is no one supposed to ever try to stop people who are taking stuff?
Well, generally speaking, we don't want their retail employees to become vigilantes and to risk their own safety as well as the potential for hurting other people by taking the law into their own hands.
But to fire them?
Well, I don't know that I'd fire them or not. Depends on the specifics of individual cases. Every one of those situations is very fact specific. Just how far they go, what lines did they cross, or what lines did they not cross? So you make those decisions in that manner. But you don't want the employees sort of beating up the customers. For example, they could make a mistake and go after the wrong person. Mm. Or, you know, even if they go after the right person, what you really want to do is get trained law enforcement and official law enforcement to be the one who actually captures the criminals, not retail employees. We care a lot about their safety and we don't want them hurt. If you start having that kind of a world, I think it'd be quite difficult. As much as you have to have admiration for a retail employee who goes after the criminal themselves, all well-motivated and well-intentioned. You could see the difficulty with vigilantism. I feel like I'm watching sort of a superhero comic strip or something where they call Spider-Man or someone a vigilante. You shouldn't be doing that, you know, like that. And you can understand the side that says, you know, that'll help the real cops catch people, not go out and catch them themselves.
Do you hear from people then, I guess finally is my last question, is hiring security too costly or is there too much of a liability? Like what are you hearing from retailers in terms of a solution to this that they'd like to see or that they're sort of talking about or discussing as a possible solution? I imagine for some hiring security is just too expensive.
Well, retailers do hire a lot of security in stores. And on top of that, just the cost of the locking things up, putting sensors on. I was in a cosmetic store today, for example. I spent a lot of time walking retail stores and I noticed how many of the products had sensors in the back of them so that someone left the store, it makes loud noises and make it difficult to get out. So retailers spend a lot of money trying to prevent theft. And again, the difficulty is almost everything that you do as a retail prevents theft, also lowers sales. So it's quite a conflict as you go about trying to deal with it. But people do hire security guards. Yet again, the issue is, do security guards actually go out and sort of, you know, try to capture the crooks, or do they try to get the real police to accomplish that objective? And generally speaking, we want the real police doing their jobs and taking care of crime.
Jerry Storch of Storch Advisors, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And now, some good news with Tanya J. Powers.
Michael Orr isn't only known for being an NFL Super Bowl champion or for his story, which was the basis for the movie The Blind Side. He's also a New York Times best-selling author. And in his second book, When Your Back's Against the Wall, he not only talks about overcoming adversity in his life, but also gives readers a playbook for doing the same. Michael's hit a few walls in his past, including homelessness, poverty, brain injury, and depression, to name a few. But he says your wall can be your opportunity. Heal yourself first is one of the ideas he puts forth in the book and says dealing with past traumas is the key to moving forward.
The world teaches us to be so strong, especially, that's the way I had to be. You're balling everything up and you're dealing with trauma, you're dealing with being in the positions that you don't want to be in, that you shouldn't be in because you didn't ask to be there. So it's a lot of wear and tear on you mentally. And before you know it, you're exploding. And healing yourself first is understanding that a hurt man doesn't hurt anyone, even a tough football player.
Another piece of advice, use what you got.
You know what's right from wrong early on. And your mind is the most powerful tool in the world. So whatever you wanted to do, whatever you want to be, you can put it in there. You can think it. It can happen. You have to plan it. You have to be consistent, develop a routine before it all can be tangible. But mm-hmm. if you're thinking 100% capacity, 100% physically, it shouldn't be a problem. You have everything, every tool that you need.
Michael and his wife Tiffany are co-founders of the Orr Foundation, which focuses on education and supporting students. His book is called When Your Back's Against the Wall, Fame, Football, and Lessons Learned Through a Lifetime of Adversity, and is out now. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Subscribe to this podcast at FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tommy Lahren.
What's on your mind?
For months, I've known the Biden White House worked with big tech and specifically Facebook to censor and reduce my presence on social media, but it's even worse than I thought. According to newly acquired Facebook notes finally handed over to House Judiciary, it is confirmed the White House asked Facebook if the platform would be able to tweak the algorithm so as to increase visibility for outlets such as the New York Times and decrease the presence of, yep, Tommy Lahren. This is not just censorship, this is big government coercing Facebook to make me less visible to those who knowingly and voluntarily follow me and to adjust the algorithm. This isn't for discussing COVID vaccine efficacy or COVID vaccine side effects. This is over me saying I personally won't get the vaccine. This is censorship, full on, full communist censorship. I'm Tommy Lahren.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to FoxNews.com. Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at FoxBusinessPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.